The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Miku, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. In these next couple hours, we'll do many things. We're going to talk in the first hour about gardening, not just flowers, but vegetables as well. It's a huge thing in our communities all around the metropolitan area. And we'll talk with our master gardeners here in just a moment and get all your, so get ready. Questions you have about funguses and fungi and plants and how to grow your carrots and more. This is a place to have your questions answered. In the next hour, we're going to take a look at Mount Auburn Cemetery and the state of African-American cemeteries in our community and around the country. And we'll also then talk with a couple of journalists who have been exposing the links between the healthcare industry and some of our elected officials who are about to make the laws about the future of healthcare in America. We'll talk about that and have a tribute to Tupac Shakur. That'll be in the next hour. And Tupac Shakur, of course, would have been 38 years old today had he not been murdered in 1996. And we'll play a tribute to him in the 6 o'clock hour. We're joined in the studio right now by Larry Close, who's Baltimore's master gardener. He's been doing that for, I'm almost afraid to count the number of years, and the hundreds of gardeners he has taught, you know, these community gardeners, gardens around the city. Max Bloom is the former president of the Maryland Horticulture Society, and he remains on their board. In a little bit, we'll be joined by Michael Sherlock, who runs the Mount Washington Arboretum. And gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
So spring has sprung. Summer's here. Let's have all your questions about gardening answered at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Some of you are vegetable gardeners. Some of you plant flowers and trees. You have, may have a passion for your community's city garden or your garden in the counties. You may have a place where you grow your own food. And these men on the studio today can answer your questions about what plagues your garden and what things you want to share about your garden. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. It is gardening time. Now, how many years have you done this, Larry Close?
Well, I've had a garden in my backyard now for 35 years. I've been gardening in the same spot. But I started about 25 years ago taking the master gardening course and sharing what I've learned and what I think can help other people live a better and easier life by teaching vegetable gardening. That's been my thrust.
And Max, good to meet you.
I'm a newcomer. This started probably about 15 years ago. I moved into a house that was somewhat dilapidated, and the landscaping, well, frankly, there was no landscaping. And I happened to see a neighbor's gardener, and I basically thought to myself, you know, if he can do it, I can do it. I went to school, and in essence, I gradually kind of taught myself some of the basics.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. So that's how you...
And so now I have basically a woodland garden, a little bit of a rock garden, and I have a swimming pool that is now what I call, my wife calls it a pooned.
A pooned?
A pooned. It's basically a swimming pool that we use the original pump to control a small waterfall. In the waterfall, I have some ultraviolet light, which gets rid of some of the bacteria. I use different vegetations, water hyacinths, which suck up the nitrogen. And I have a largemouth bass, which we call Hoover.
Just one?
Well, we have two, actually. And Hoover basically keeps it clean for us. Hoover, by the way, in England, is a vacuum cleaner.
Yes. He's here, too, you know.
And so, in essence, the problem we have is that goldfish find their way into the pond, and they kind of multiply rather rapidly. So Hoover keeps things under control.
He eats the goldfish.
So we have a nice balance, and it's very clean, and we use no chemicals, of course. And we enjoy it very much.
Michael Sherlock, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us. When he's not being a pediatrician, he runs the Mount Washington Arboretum. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
And you've gone through a lot of changes at the Mount Washington Arboretum.
Well, yes, we have, since we started.
So let me open the phones. If folks are calling in already, let's have them join us here at 410-319-8888. All of your questions about gardening, whether it's your fruit trees, whether it's the vegetables you're growing, whether it's the flowers in your garden, I think the men in the studio today can answer all manner of questions that you may have. 410-319-8888. Let's go to June in Baltimore County. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, June.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Welcome.
Hi. I have a crabapple tree in my backyard, and it had fruit on there about 2 years ago, but it hasn't had any fruit on there since. So what can I do to, like, encourage it to blossom again?
Who's the crabapple expert here?
Well, I have a crabapple tree in my backyard, too. I've only had it for 3 or 4 years. It's had fruit on it every year. Did your tree flower this year? Did it flower?
Not yet. Well, I don't know if it should be there now or not, but it's not.
It should have already flowered. Michael, you have any
ideas? Does it have a loss of leaves on the tree?
Yeah, it does.
All right. Well, crabapples are subject to fungal diseases like scab and various others. So that's probably the problem, is that you probably have some fungal disease that's involving the wood of the crabapple. The other thing about crabapples is they're pollinated by bees. And with the decline of the bees lately because of bee decline, if your crabapple had flowered and not formed fruit, I would think maybe it was because of the problem we're having with the bees. But if the leaves weren't doing well, then it was probably some fungal disease. And I don't like chemicals. I'm like Larry. We don't go much for chemicals. Usually when crabapples get something like this, you're better just removing it and buying a disease-resistant variety, like Donald Wyman is a very disease-resistant one.
For crabapples?
Yeah.
Do people eat crabapples? I remember crabapple trees as a kid. We never ate the crabapples. We were always told, if you eat that crabapple, you're going to have a stomachache.
They're good for throwing and having wars among kids, right. But I don't think they're good for eating. They're ornamental, but not edible.
Right.
They're often used because of the blooms that they have early in the year. It's very beautiful. It's a reminder that spring is here. It's used really ornamentation, I think, than any other reason I can think of. We did have a lot of moisture early in the year, and I'm wondering that would tend to encourage some negative aspects in terms of fungicides and things like that.
Uh-huh.
So that might be a part of the problem.
Next year, before it flowers, you can spray it with something called a dormant wool spray. And what that does, it smothers the funguses that are on the trees and any insects that are on the tree. And it's purely organic. But you can't do it. I think you can't do it this late in the season.
No. Thanks so much for calling.
Can I love it again?
Dormant wool spray.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much, June. 410-319-8888. And Keith in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Keith.
I want your guest to talk a little bit about the connection between the sprouting of these gardens and urban areas and how you can get folks in big cities a bit more connected to this movement of planting gardens and how they actually relate to the farmers markets that are sprouting up all over the place. In fact, we just begun one at the State Center complex every Wednesday, and they're all over the place, and much of that is happening as a result of some public efforts under the Governor's Smart Green and Growing Initiative and of course some private efforts, but I wanted to know what your thoughts are with respect to how these gardens relate to urban areas and how they can become more a greater part of the landscape.
Very close.
That yeah, it's. I'm glad you asked the question. Just before we came in the air, I said to Mark, I hope someone asked about urban agriculture. And I think Baltimore is really in the forefront of this in many ways. One of the very interesting things that's happening is in front of City Hall, where there are usually flowers, there's now vegetables. And it really is a sight for sore eyes. It's a very, very productive situation. And we've already harvested all the early spring crops, the cabbages and the cauliflowers and the lettuces. And our daily bread is serving them. And I've been working down there, and I had the opportunity to meet a guy who eats regularly at our daily bread. And he was saying how much the fair has improved since they started serving fresh vegetables and how much he really likes it. So I'd like to encourage anybody who has a chance to go down City Hall and take a look at the gardens. You're absolutely right. There is a movement afoot to try to grow more of our produce locally so we don't have to truck it in for miles and miles and have to eat things that aren't as fresh as they possibly can be. And one of the things, there is an urban agricultural task force that meets regularly. And one of the things they're going to be doing in the near future is they're going to be trying to bring together people with urban land that they're willing to have someone farm and people who are interested in farming it. And it can be for their own use or it could be as a way of having a livelihood. So it really is exciting.
I want to come back to what Keith raised. Let me go back to the phones and get some other callers in, but I want to talk about the kind of change in how we're looking at the world here with all this urban agriculture, people doing their own gardens and communities, how people can actually feed themselves in cities. And if you're one of those community gardeners, we'd love to hear from you at 410-319-8888. Whatever it is you're growing, we'd like to hear your stories. And Suzanne on the road, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I do live in the city of Baltimore. I do live in a row house. I do have a small garden, but I also like some grass, and my grass has just been overrun by Creeping Charlie, and I'm organic, so I'm trying to figure out what to do about it.
Creeping Charlie.
Yes.
It's this creeping thing. It has little...
I know what you're talking about. It's called, another name for it is Jill Over the Ground. It's in the mint family. If you feel the stem of it, it's square. All mints have square stems, so it is in the mint family, but it's not edible. And it's very low-growing, and it will invade anything that it gets to. It's very hard to get rid of. The best thing to do is to pull it up by the roots. It's very shallowly rooted, and if you keep after it, you can get rid of it.
Okay.
I have a suggestion, perhaps.
I keep thinking that I should hire a whole bunch of children sometime and just sit them down in my lawn.
I have a suggestion. You might, instead of having something that you have to use fertilizer and something that you have to cut, you might consider using some other plant material like liriope, which will give you as a bonus a little flower as well. And it's very hardy and it takes a little bit of shade, which is very helpful.
What is it called?
Liriope.
Could you spell it?
L-I-R-O-P-E.
L-I-R-O-P-E.
Liriope.
You're saying as a lawn substitute? Is that what you're
saying? I'm saying for a small garden, for a small area, it could be used instead of having grass and using, you know, the fertilizers, etc., which we all abhor.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that you could use as a substitute for grass, although you'd still have to get rid of the Creeping Charlie, is there's a little plant called Pennsylvania sedge, and it grows in wooded areas. It takes shade, and it's a grass substitute, and you never have to mow it.
Oh.
What does it look like?
It looks like little fountains of grass about 6 to 12 inches high, and it spreads by underground runners, and it will eventually form an impenetrable carpet, and it's beautiful. It looks like a flowing, like the surface of a wheat field.
Huh. What's it called again?
It's called Pennsylvania sedge.
Pennsylvania sedge. Does it have to have sun?
No. It prefers some shade, although it can take sun if it gets enough water.
So but if you have an area that has trees, you want to put something under the trees, it's probably a good thing.
Yeah, if you want something for dry shade as a grass substitute, like if it's hard to grow grass, this thing will do wonderfully. And you may have to mow it once a year.
I actually despise grass. And the notion of mowing it makes me crazy. And I have too much of it as it is. It makes me crazy, but yeah. Thank you so much, Suzanne. I hope that helped a little bit.
Okay.
Take care. Drive carefully.
Okay.
410-319-8888. We have master gardeners in the classroom today. In the studio today. Actually, we're in the classroom because it is a university, isn't it? 410-319-8888. Max Bloom, Larry Close, and Michael Sherlock. And Tazewell and Woodlawn, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a question. I have a lot of exotic plants on my land, and I'm not a landscaper, but my particular concern is that I have a lot of ivy, and in this one particular plant, it's a Japanese bonsai tree. It's been wired so that it grows on an angle. It has a lot of dead stuff in it, and I'm hesitant to cut it because I don't want to cut and end up killing the bonsai tree. You understand?
Yeah.
So how do you go about it? I mean, is there any suggestions other than getting a landscaper come in?
Yeah, right. Do the inexpensive way to do it yourself, Max. Any thoughts?
There's a book called Landscaping for Dummies, but I mean, I looked in the first four chapters of it, and it said you had to map out what you wanted, but there's so much on my land. I mean, you know, I'm just trying to deal with what I have.
Could you give me an idea of how old it is and how high it is? How big is it?
Oh, it's about, 60 feet wide. And about 8 on an angle.
Wow.
You're going to have to be brave, okay? You're going to have a good beer before you start and be determined. It's time to prune it. And you've got to be brave. I suggest you do it perhaps in the autumn and make it into the shape that you feel is appropriate for the size of the other material in your yard. It will grow. It will grow. And you're going to have to live with perhaps a little unsightliness for maybe a few months. But it's time to prune it. There's no question about it. I think my colleagues would agree.
Mm.
Yes.
Major pruning.
Major pruning.
One question.
Sure.
Do you cut from the top down, or are you going inside where the dead stuff is and cut out?
Well, first of all, definitely cut the dead stuff out. Then see what you've got. And then shape it. Just shape it. Shape it to the shape that you want. And basically, it should be, you know, the lower section should be, of course, wider. But I personally think I would probably start at the... I'm looking at my colleagues here. I think I would probably start at the top. I don't think it makes a lot of difference. And just try and... But every once in a while, get off the ladder, walk back 10, 15 feet... and take a look at it, and then go back and do a little bit more. You can always take more off.
Okay, okay. I appreciate that.
Sure. You know, good luck, Tazma.
You might want to get a pruning book. Like I think the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, they make little books that are like $10 a piece, okay. And they cover specific subjects. Like they have one on pruning that it doesn't go into great detail, but it might be helpful in your situation, or getting a professional like Chad Verani at Bartlett Tree. He's very good at pruning big trees and doing it in an artistic way.
Well, what it is I have about 25 different trees and plants, and in the spring, it's awesome. It looks like the Garden of Eden. But, and the grass, I mean, I have enough grass to keep me growing. It's too bad grass wasn't money, because if it was, I'd be Donald Trump.
I understand. I understand that. I feel the same way. Tazewell, thanks so much. Good luck with the bonsai tree. Let us know how it comes out. Be careful.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. 410-319-8888. Christine, on your cell, you're on the air.
Hi,
Christine.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have two comments. One, that every year when I was growing up, we used to make cran apple jelly. Crab apple jelly, and it was made from the cooked pressed crab apples, and it's wonderful. And the wonderful thing about it is you don't need to add pectin because it's so biting that it doesn't just need to add sugar, and it gels on its own, and it's absolutely fantastic. And the other comment, or other question actually I had was about my, I have an azalea, a dwarf azalea in my front yard, And we had two of them, and the one I almost killed, and it's kind of, and I was wondering if there's any way to splice it or to create a second one of the one I have, because I can't seem to find anything similar to it. It was there when I bought the house 9 years ago, and it already looked old. So I was curious as to if there's anything I can do to kind of reproduce the one that I have that I like.
Interesting question. Who's the azalea person?
Well,
here?
You'd have to take cuttings, and I've never tried it, so I don't know how easy it is to take cuttings. But you might talk to, there's a woman at the Baltimore Conservancy or Conservatory.
Conservatory.
The greenhouse in Druid Hill Park. Yeah, her name is Kate Blum.
Correct.
And she knows how to do cuttings and grow things from seed, which I'm not an expert on. So you might want to call Kate Blum and talk to her.
Kate Blum, okay.
Yeah.
You could experiment a little bit.
Okay.
You could do it now. I think it's time. The bloom has stopped. Blooming has stopped on the azaleas. If you look for a kind of a healthy-looking branch and then chop off about maybe 6 to 8 inches,
mm-hmm.
Take off the lower 3 or 4 leaves, if there are there. When you cut it on a slant. Don't cut it straight. Cut it on a slant, okay? And then you could just pop it in water if you want to. There are some materials that you can use that will stimulate it. But you can just pop it in water, and then you could make sure it stays wet. Put some soil in there, some humus, you know, whatever it is that you want. And just see, and you'll see.
Okay.
Put it in a glass, and you'll see the roots start to spread.
Okay.
And enjoy yourself.
Thank you very much. I'll try that.
Thanks, Christine. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. 410-319-8888. For the next caller, have you ever made crab apple jelly? You're the master canner and maker of all kinds of foods.
I'm not a jelly guy. I really do like beans and tomatoes. And
you make a great Bloody Mary mix.
Yeah, tomato juice.
I appreciate the Bloody Mary mix you gave us. That was good. 410-319-8888. Maria, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I've got a question on a Japanese red maple. We lived in the house for 4 years, and it was in the back, started from seed by the previous owner. And it's about 6 feet tall and hasn't grown much, but every year it would at least leaf out all through branches and the top. But this year it hasn't. The only place there's any leaves are way down on the bottom of the trunk. And then there were some small dead branches. I took those off. And then the rest is just naked. And I'm not sure. I don't think it's dead, but I'm kind of confused by what it's doing and not doing this year, and I'm wondering if there's something I should be doing for it.
Well, Japanese red maples are very subject to a disease called canker, and I've had some very disappointing results from beautiful Japanese maples in my backyard. They do well for a few years, and then they just, one whole part of it will just die back, and it's a fungal disease that invades the vascular system, and once it happens, it's that part of it is gone. You just have to prune back to the living part of the Japanese maple, like back where you see the leaves on the trunk.
Uh-huh.
That part of it is still alive. So if you prune it all the way back, it may regenerate, but it'll probably look terrible for a couple of years. But they're very susceptible to canker, which is probably worse in a wet spring like we're having.
Mm-hmm. Is there some way that I can look at it and determine that it is the canker? Is there something that you can see on it?
Well, if there are just parts of it that just seem to be totally dead and there's no leaves in the far-out reaches of that branch, that's almost always canker. If you look at the leaves and it looks like it's being eaten up by a bug of some kind, then it might be an insect. But canker, it starts very low down, and it goes all the way to the end, and all the leaves at the far end of that branch, whatever is involved, will be dead. Now, if you want to find out, you could call the extension agent. Larry, do you know that a person, they're available by phone every morning from 8 to 1, and they can actually receive specimens and look at them and try to diagnose it.
Yeah, it's a University of Maryland Extension Service. I think I have their card in my wallet. Listen on, and I'll look through my wallet, and when I come across it, we'll give you the number.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Maria.
Thanks so much.
Just out of curiosity, what kind of drainage does the tree have? Is it in a flat area? Is it on a hill?
It is. It's in a flat area. It gets a lot of sun. The drainage is good. The drainage is really good.
Okay, good.
You just heard the voice of Max Bloom, former president of the Maryland Horticultural Society, who is also still on their board. Larry Close is the voice before that. We always think of him as Baltimore's master gardener. He's done more in the city to create vegetable gardens than any single person that we know. All the community gardens we have around town, and Michael Sherlock runs the Mount Washington Arboretum. He's not posing as a pediatrician. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Let's see, we have... should we take a break? Let's take one call before break. Can we do that? We have time. Darnell in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling because I purchased a crepe myrtle in a dwarf state, planted it, and it seems like the roots have taken, but the tree is still dormant. I don't see any kind of growth, no green, except I did scrape the bark last week, and when I scraped the bark, there was some green underneath, so I assumed that it's still alive. But I don't know what I should do, whether I could return it because it is guaranteed or just wait.
Max?
I strongly suggest you return it. Okay.
Okay.
I think if this time of year you don't have some obvious life, I think you have a dud. There's not much more to be said, really. It just happens sometimes.
Okay.
But before you plant the new one, check the soil. And see if you can't figure out what the pH of the soil is.
Okay.
It might be too alkaline, it may be too acid, but there is an ideal situation, and it's conceivable that there may be too much clay. There could be many, many reasons. But I would suggest at this time, if you don't have some significant life in the tree, that you probably take it back.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you for
All
calling
right.
in.
Bye-bye.
We appreciate it. We're talking with three of Baltimore's great minds of the earth here, talk about our gardens. So many of us are not just planting flowers and trees, but, of course, are vegetable gardeners, and really think a lot about our vegetables. And we are going to talk a bit with Larry Close, one of our guests here in a moment, about how we really can become self-sufficient in our own lives, with even a small plot of land, let alone the community gardens are developing, and what you can put in our parks that are opening up. The number here is 410-319-8888. We see a lot of people calling in. Ellen and Jonathan will be the next two callers up. We're going to take a very short break and come back to Larry Close, Max Bloom, and Michael Sherlock to take your questions. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. In the studio right now are three men who know a great deal about the gardens that we grow, whether it's vegetables, flowers, other kinds of plants, or trees. In the studio is Larry Close, Baltimore's master gardener, Max Bloom, former president of the Maryland Horticultural Society, still on his board, and Michael Sherlock, who runs the Mount Washington Arboretum, and you with the gardens at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Jonathan, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
and I appreciate you tackling this subject. It is a wide range. But I do have a comment for an earlier caller and a question.
Okay.
Okay, first, with the azaleas, one way to reproduce that I have seen done, I haven't actually been able to do this myself, I haven't ever tried, but what I have seen done is if there's a young branch that is just coming on, you can stretch it out across the ground and cover it with a brick or log or something, and it will sprout in a similar way to strawberries, the way that strawberries will put off, I guess you could say feelers or something. They'll put out stems that will root, take root.
Hmm.
But I have seen azaleas reproduce that way, and then after it takes root and begins to become a plant on the other end, you can make the cutting and actually dig it up and transplant it in the place where you want it. That's one way I've seen.
That's interesting.
And, okay.
I would agree, absolutely. That's a very good way of doing it.
Yes.
It's easy. Just the only thing is to kind of keep, if you can, keep it a little on the moist side. It will work very well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good technique. It's called layering when you put a branch on the ground. And I've heard, I haven't done it myself, although I've accidentally had it happen with azaleas of my own. But if you injure the, you scrape the branch a little bit before you bury it, it'll form roots more readily. If you just injure the bark a little bit, scrape a little bit of the bark.
Scrape the brown part off.
And then pin it down with a pin of some kind.
Right.
Like a wire, and then cover the injured branch up, and then, and if you keep it moist, like Max suggested, it'll form roots.
Now, you had a question too, Jonathan?
Yes, a brief question, and forgive me for not knowing the name of these plants. They're beautiful flowers that you see all through Baltimore, D.C. area, all up and down the East Coast, that have big flowers that people sometimes call snowballs, and I've seen them in blue and
hydrangea.
Hydrangea,
yeah.
I know that you can, with different techniques, you can alter the color of the flowers. And
yes.
Right now I've got blue, and I would like to have a pinkish or reddish. What can I do to the soil to change the color of those? Also, how do I reproduce those plants? That's something I haven't been able to do either.
Well, the answer is making the soil either acid or alkaline. Now, somebody help me out, but I'm sure, I think if you make it acid, it will be blue, or it may be the other way around.
I think it's the other way
around. The other way around. Alkaline, and it will be blue.
I forget that.
And acid, it will be more reddish, pinkish. And if the hydrangea is a woodland plant, and its natural habitat is where there has been lots of humus from trees that leaves have fallen down, and that has an acid nature. And usually the color of the hydrangea is often white, sometimes pinkish. To get it to be blue, you have to kind of play games. But basically, and the other thing is that it is a shade, partial shade loving as well. So.
Okay, because I've actually got blue now, and was hoping to change it to pinkish or reddish.
Yeah. Then you'd have to add something to acidify the ground, like, I think, isn't it aluminum sulfate?
Aluminum sulfate,
You can use for acidifying.
Yes.
Or sulfur, just plain sulfur.
Yeah.
You can get powdered sulfur. Or if you want to make it alkaline and have the blue color, if the soil is acid and you want to turn it blue, then you would add a lime to make it alkaline.
Correct.
Okay.
Enjoy your hydrangeas, Jonathan.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care. And I think the next couple of calls might actually be about vegetables. Coming back to Larry Close at 410-319-8888. First we'll go to Marianne in Odington, then we'll go to Ellen in Baltimore. Marianne, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for this program.
Our pleasure.
I have a blueberry plant that I purchased in the spring, and I want to make sure that I'm taking care of it properly. I have it in a container on the deck, and it's been getting pretty good rain and sun. And is there anything else I can do to make sure I have blueberries?
You know, I was terribly, I was very unsuccessful with blueberries the one time I tried it. I know they like the soil acid. Any either of you help me? I'm not real good at blueberries.
Yeah, I've had terrible luck with them also. My neighbor, who is not a gardener, has the most magnificent blueberries. And I'm very jealous. I keep asking her, what are you doing to get these wonderful blueberries? And she doesn't know what she's doing. But they do like very, very acid conditions. And I think you can use something like aluminum sulfate, or if you add a lot of shredded oak leaves around the base of the blueberry, it'll make it more acid. And one thing you have to watch out for is deer will love blueberries. If you have deer nearby, they will chew them right back to the bare wood.
And the birds love the, as soon as you can get them, the birds are going to get them.
Right. So there's a lot of competition.
How about rabbits? Will rabbits?
Yes, rabbits will eat them also. We've had trouble at the Arboretum with the rabbits eating them low down, the ones that are within reach. And then the deer will eat the ones farther up. And the birds, the ones on top of that.
So do I need to fertilize?
I think with an acid fertilizer, Larry, what's the name of that acid for Max?
Acetone? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
The one that has that's an acidic, used for azaleas.
Okay, great.
Anyway, right. It's something that's used for it's an acidic fertilizer, and I think that one works best for blueberries.
Wonderful. Thank you for your help.
Sure, good luck.
Sure. You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
Enjoy the blueberries. 410-319-8888. Answer all your gardening and vegetable questions here this hour, at least the growing of the vegetables. And Ellen in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hey.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi, how are you?
Well.
Hey, I'm a Baltimore master gardener, and I help coordinate something called the plant clinics. And I thought maybe your listeners might be interested in them. Larry obviously knows about them.
Sure.
Yeah, they're like a table set up at the Sunday market and at the Saturday market, so the market under the JFX and the Waverly Farmers Market. And it's basically just like your show right now. It's a bunch of master gardeners who hang out and answer questions and diagnose diseases and all sorts of other fun gardening things, mm-hmm. And it's free. So folks can come down either to the Saturday or the Sunday market and bring your, you know, leaves that have spots on them or your questions or whatever, and the master gardeners can help you out.
So this is at the market in Charles Village and the one under the expressway?
Yes, those two markets, Saturday and Sunday, and they're there from 8 to 11.
Well, that's great. This is really good to know. Thank you, Ellen.
All right, see ya.
Take care. So let's talk a bit about that before we jump back to the phones and join us here at 410-319-8888. Whether you're growing vegetables, flowers, plants, questions about your trees, your lawn, now's the time to call in to 410-319-8888 or write to us here at steinershow @gmail.com to have them answered. And this whole movement that people are moving back towards in terms of growing vegetables again, and Baltimore's kind of really getting at the forefront of all of this. And I think that it's, you've always said, Larry, that, we could actually feed ourselves. Most of us here in Baltimore or any other city, we could actually feed ourselves.
It's amazing how much you can get out of a little bit of space. A garden isn't just a singular thing, a vegetable garden. It's actually a succession of gardens. And we're very fortunate to live in this climate because you have an early spring that's cool, that's good for cabbages and cauliflowers. You get a real hot summer that's good for tomatoes and peppers and cucumbers. And then you get a fall that you can once again grow lettuce and cabbages and collards and kale. So it's really a very productive area. And if you properly prepare a piece of soil so that you're not just growing on a bunch of rocks or an old cement slab that you don't even know about, if you deeply dig and cultivate the soil to start with and add lots of organic matter into the soil, and you will really be amazed at how much you can grow in a little bit of space, because once a piece of land is properly cultivated, the roots of the plants are able, instead of going just horizontally, they're able to go vertically. And some roots, some plants like tomatoes can go down, the roots can go down as much as 4 feet. So if you just haven't done anything in preparation, that tomato plant will take over all, take all the nutrients in the first foot of the space, and you won't be able to grow anything else. So the key to really success is to well prepare the soil and add lots of organic matter while you're doing it. And you'll be able to feed a family of four for a summer in vegetables on a 4 by 12 foot raised bed.
I mean, and maybe more if you can.
Yeah, maybe more if you can. I mean, it's, and it's a game and it's fun, and you're being self-sufficient. You're not dependent on anyone else, and it's, and you develop a skill that you can that you'll always have, and no matter whether they come out with a new computer or a better washing machine, you'll be able to grow your vegetables and be able to take care of yourself.
410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll come back to the phones here in just a minute. Bring all your questions about gardening here to the airwaves, whether you're thinking of growing, thinking about a vegetable garden or worried about something in your vegetable garden or your flower garden and what you're, and how to prune it and how to keep it alive. Maybe have a fungus attack in it. Questions about your lawn, your trees, fruit trees, or just your regular trees you love in your garden. 410-319-8888. In the studio, you just heard Larry Close, Master Gardener, Max Bloom, who's former president of the Maryland Horticulture Society, Michael Sherlock, who runs the Mount Washington Arboretum. 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I have an email that says, greetings, we are two households who began planning a garden, Vega Victory's Earth's Green Gravy Allotment at Harbell, last winter, and now have it on in the ground. Everything we grow is organic, of course. We've attempted to reuse or reclaim all the materials we've needed, from the bricks surrounding the raised beds to rainwater. We just finished making our own rain barrels, which are set up. We currently have 4 in use at the VEGGA, capital, small letter A, capital H. I guess that's Vega. But have produced over a dozen for sale at cost to anyone who wishes to purchase one. We're located within the city of Mount Washington. I may be contacted this email address, veggaah@wordpress.com. You know that? Anything about that, Larry?
No, it leaves me. I don't know anything about it. I know that rain barrels are very popular now, and it's a great idea. Instead of having the water just run off into the streams and flood the streams, you capture it and put it in your gardens where it's needed. But I'm not sure what he's talking about.
Or she, I think these are
two. She's talking about.
410-319-8888, and Laura in Baltimore, you're on the air.
The Italian prune plum tree in my backyard, and I can never tell when it's time for them to be picked.
What kind of plum tree is it?
Italian prune plum. So they get really bright purple.
A prune
and
plum.
And the first year, I didn't know when to pull them off, and by then they were already falling off the tree and rotting.
Are you talking about a purple plum tree? It's an ornamental. It gets these little plums that fall off. That really aren't edible?
Well, I think I ate them. I did eat them, and they have like a really yellow inside, and they're very, very sweet, and their shape's kind of oblong. I know you can eat them, actually.
Now, you're puzzling this entire panel. We think we've stumped the panel here. Laura, what did you call this plum tree again? Say it again.
I'm not sure. I think it's called Italian prune plums.
Italian prune plums.
Actually, I saw them at the market when I went to the Waverly Market.
Uh-huh.
That's how I figured out that I was doing it all wrong, because they were so purple, like bright purple. I thought that they had to wait till they got more black or like a darker purple. So I never pulled them off. And when I went to the market, they had them there. And she said, oh, no, they're ready to go now. And by then they were just like too far gone.
Well, it sounds like you might just follow what the woman said at the market, and when they look like those things, when was that?
Just pull them off and they become purple?
Yeah, when was that you had this conversation?
It was one of the stands at
the Waverly Farmers Market last year, but it looks like they're still green now, so they're not ready, but I don't want to make the mistake again.
No, no, I just grab them when they take a few off when they get to that purple stage and take a big bite and see what they're like. And if it works, then you know you're in the right place.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. I'll try one.
Thank you.
All right, take care, Laura. Bye-bye.
Bye.
410-319-8888. Sally and Bowie, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Sally.
I wanted to ask, hi, how are you, about my apple tree. It's a yellow gala apple, I believe. It's about 3 years old. I've had it for 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And now, I attempted to do some spraying this year. I'm sorry. I did it after the blooms.
I want to apologize.
after they had fallen off. And I got in, like, 3 rounds of spraying. But my leaves right now have orange round spots throughout the whole tree.
Michael Sherlock?
Well, I wouldn't be so alarmed about insect damage to your tree. Actually, I'd like to just put in a plug for a book about leaving bugs alone and why that's a good idea. This is now a bestseller, and I hear this guy speak at every conference I go to. He's at the University of Delaware. His name is Douglas Tallamy. And he's written a new book called Bringing Nature Home, How You Can Sustain Wildlife with Native Plants. And he makes a case for allowing some insects to live in our yards and not spraying unless it's absolutely necessary. And he makes the case that native plants are often a lot better for feeding native butterflies and other bugs, and that all birds depend on these. And there's a web of life that's basically based on native plants, and that we should be more careful about trying to scour our gardens and make them absolutely free of all bugs, that this is not a good situation ecologically for especially the birds and other animals that depend on insects.
I've noticed, and Sally, did you have your question answered, by the way?
Not really. I was wondering.
All right. I think your disease is probably some fungal problem, and I would call the extension agent. We're going to give you the 1-800 number to call, and they can tell you if you absolutely must use a spray. Mark has the number of the extension agent.
The number, the hotline, is open from 8 a.m. to 12 noon, Monday through Friday. The hotline is 1-800-342-2507.
Thank you.
Sure. Good luck with that.
All I've called them many times, and they're very helpful. Even when you're knowledgeable, they can add something to what you've already what you need to know.
Well, I was wondering, maybe I oversprayed. I've never sprayed before. I thought maybe I did a damage by putting too much on it.
I would advise you, when you call them, have the spray bottle in front of you. And tell them what it is and what the mixture was and et cetera.
All right, great. Well, thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Hope you have some good apples. 410-319-8888 to all your gardening questions to be answered this hour with our guests in studio here, Larry Close, Max Bloom, and Michael Sherlock. 410-319-8888, whether it's vegetables or flowers or trees or questions of pruning and funguses or what is even good in your garden, share your stories. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I have noticed this year a real dearth of butterflies. You're talking about how native plants kind of attract and bring insects back. And Valerie and I have been talking about a lot, about how to start planting more and more native plants and not in bringing in things that don't exist here naturally. Because we've seen fewer swallowtails. Maybe I've seen two so far this spring. I usually see there are usually a lot around, and bees are just not there.
Right. Well, all of these insects, they don't do well if there's too much rain. They if you notice, butterflies, you don't see them on rainy days. They usually are out when it's sunny. And I'm not sure, but I think it may have something to do with the very wet spring that we've had this year. I'm not sure, though.
How about in your garden, Larry?
I have to agree with you. I have not seen many butterflies this year, except those terrible white ones that lay their eggs on the
cabbage. Cabbage butterflies?
Yeah.
Cabbage. They're always there. They don't care what the story is.
Do you grow cabbages?
Yeah, I grow a lot of cabbage. A wonderful crop because in a square foot, I mean, you could get, you know, a whole week's worth of vegetables out of it. It's and you can make so many wonderful things with cabbages.
So now what's in your garden now? What have you planted so far? What do you have in there now?
Well, you know, we're really at a transition time. A lot of the early crops that like it cold have matured. The broccoli and the cabbages are just coming into their own. And so it's now time to put in the peppers and the tomatoes and the cucumbers. And some things are like kale and collards. They continue to produce the whole summer long.
Into the fall and winter, collards can keep going.
Yeah, and they can even winter over, the collards can.
So it's not too late for me.
No, it's not too late. Especially anybody that's, you know, buys plants, pepper plants or tomato plants or cucumber plants, you know, you really are going to get some. If you plant in the next couple of weeks, you're going to be able to have a plenty to eat this summer. So.
All right, we'll have to get into that. Let's go back to the phone so not to monopolize the men in the room here. 410-319-8888. Levon in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello, yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions.
Sure.
I have two yucca plants, and they have bloomed, but last year some bugs really, really infested and almost killed them. I didn't think they would come through the winter, but they did. They did bloom, seemed like kind of late. I was wondering how to get rid of these bugs. They're small little bugs, and they're black and red. And, I mean, it's like, it seems like there's thousands of them. They don't fly. My daughter's giving me, she's telling me how they look. She's tried to inspect them or whatever. But and my second question is irises. I have a lot of irises, different colors, but there are quite a few of them that are not blooming. You know, they just have the pretty leaf that comes up every year, but they don't bloom. So what am I doing wrong with those irises?
Two good questions. What about
I'll take the questions off the air.
Thank you, Levon.
Why don't I handle the yucca one, and Max probably knows the other one.
All right.
The bugs on your yucca are probably mites, if they don't have wings. Mites are little bugs that have no wings, and they just suck the juices out of the plant. I've never seen this on a yucca, but it sounds like that's what it is. I think if you sprayed it with insecticidal soap, which is a safe organic material, you may have to spray them multiple times, but it will, I think, control them.
Insecticidal soap.
Insecticidal soap. Safers, S-A-F-E-R is one brand name. You can buy it, and basically it's like dish detergent, and it will suffocate sucking insects like aphids.
Well, that's interesting. Though. I'll have to help Valerie's listen to that one.
You can use even dish detergent if you want to, and just spray it on. Anything that's going to prevent oxygen, it's going to suffocate the bugs. That's basically what it is to it. As far as the irises are concerned, are these irises in water or are they in soil?
She's off the phone. She's down the line.
Oh, okay. Well, if they're in... irises bloom for just a very short period of time. They don't last very long. Basically it's the foliage that you're left with.
I wish we had more time. We'll have to have you gentlemen back and to have this conversation again. We have plumb out of time. Larry Close, Max Bloom, and Michael Sherlock, thank you all so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Our pleasure.
Good to have you all
thank
here.
Thank you.
Folks, we'll take a very short break and come right back, and we're going to talk about Mount Auburn Cemetery. And preserving this great African-American treasure in our community and why it needs to be preserved and what's going on with that, and talk more about Congress and health care and those who influence it with their money and have a remembrance of Tupac Shakur. So stay with us. We'll be right back.